Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Michael Cameron. Michael Cameron is a new British author whose book is called High Strangeness, A Lifetime of Alien and Paranormal Encounters, published by Flying Disc Press. Michael was an unexpected child and born prematurely and remained in hospital for a while before being taken back to what would have been his childhood home. Cameron grew up in the East End of London, which stood in between the City of London and the Tower of London. This particular area had been a location steeped in a rich, dark history that reached back into Roman times, as well as Victorian London, when in 1888 the streets had been a place of terror for those who dwelled therein from the infamous Jack the Ripper. It had been a location that during the Second World War had seen some of the worst bombings of the Blitz by the Germans. Michael's book focuses primarily on his childhood home, set within the grounds of a Roman Catholic school, from a young age he would encounter high strangeness. Michael, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hello, James, and thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Michael. Tell us a bit about yourself. Your book is fascinating because you managed to retain a lot of conscious memory of your encounters, both physical and out of your body, and you'll delve into all that. But tell us a bit about yourself and how you started to come to this realization at such an early age.
I actually grew up in the house that I grew up in was plagued actually with poltergeist activity. And this was, when I was, as I said, when I was brought back from the hospital and I was in my cot, much later on, my parents would tell me that the room would be filled with light, what would be, I guess, balls of light flying around, moving through the walls. And on particular times, there was what they said was a glowing entity or being standing looking over at me into my cot. And a lot of, there was lots of cold spots in the house where there was previously none until I actually turned up, so they said. There was objects that would move, the typical poltergeist, activity, objects that would vanish and then reappear. There was a time when my parents were going up to bed and they were in bed for a little while, and almost every night this would happen, there would be a strange banging on the walls, in these houses. They were like Victorian type houses, strong solid walls. And I remember they were telling me that there was like really big loud banging, if you were to hit the wall yourself, it'd just be like a thud. But these were echoing, like, as I say, like stereo surround. Echoing out, really unusual sound. And whenever he went to investigate my dad, the sound would stop, and when he returned to bed, it would begin again. And there was also like disembodied voices that would call out to my mum when she was in the house, and when she was upstairs normally, and she was there on her own, and she would feel somebody behind her. And when you look around, there was no one there, but then she would hear a voice being called over and over again, and until she eventually, got a little bit spooked and then run off out of the room. I remember her telling, us, and my dad later on. I remember another time that France, there's in my book, you see, I describe three of my brothers, Francis, Kevin, and Sean. Sean, as I say, is 2 years older than me. And Francis and Kevin were back then, they were a lot older than us. Me and Sean. I was the youngest. And Francis had been in bed one day, and we had there was a big, heavy brown oak wardrobe in the room, and it was toppled over on top of him. But he wasn't hurt, he was just shocked. Another time, Kevin had been coming up the stairs, and something invisible pushed past him and down the stairs. And he went tumbling down the stairs, basically. Again, he wasn't hurt, luckily, but he was, really shook up. So, I mean, for a while, this activity went on for a while, but my parents never said anything because they lived in a Roman Catholic Irish community. And I guess they didn't know what to say or maybe didn't want ridicule. But because it went on a long period of time, and I guess because the activity got a little bit more menacing, where somebody could particularly be hurt, they sought out somebody, you know, from the church. And I remember somebody coming, you know, my parents were saying that somebody come and they blessed their house, and a lot of the activity started to die down. So, you know, but it was interesting because when I was researching my book, I discovered that the house itself was built on a Roman lepers cemetery. So, you know, there obviously was some sort of dark history there with regards to the blueprints, I guess, of this location.
And you talked about how you were seeing light phenomena, and your family and your parents observed light phenomena. Did at some point did you realize that some of this activity seemed to be focused around you, like it was seemingly trying to get your attention?
I think it wasn't until much later on that it come to my realization something strange was happening. But to be honest with you, I don't think it actually hit me or dawned on me until much into the 1990s that I started to research it, because the activity, the abductions were becoming much more focused and more, I guess, intrusive and quite frightening in some ways. So I wanted to try to understand what was happening and why it was happening to me. But, you know, earlier on, you know, I had experiences with Sean as well.
Could you tell us about some of your childhood experiences you had singly, and also you mentioned a friend of yours, and you also mentioned Sean and your brothers. Just take us through that whole process of what your childhood was like with this phenomena.
Yeah, earlier on, before some of the experiences I had with Sean, I started to have, you know, what my parents referred to as invisible friends, I guess. For whatever reason, this just appeared to me at one point in my life. I can't really say when, but it was, I would say, you know, I was very young. And I remember I used to go up into my room, and on one particular occasion, which I mentioned, you know, in my book, is that these two beings appear in front of me, which is a male and a female. You know, they had long blonde hair, blue eyes, you know, very, I guess, good looking, and taller than a lot of the adults that would be around me. And I remember they used to talk to me and sometimes play games. I remember they used to play follow the leader a lot of the time with me. And I had to follow them and, you know, into different rooms. I remember they used to be talking to me, but as I speak about in the book, I don't remember exactly what they said. As I point out, I'm somebody who sees and remembers through visuals rather than audio. But on this particular occasion, I could hear my mum coming up the stairs, and the bedroom door was closed. I could hear her on the staircase coming up, I guess, to see what I was doing. And I remember my two friends standing near, close to the windows, where the windows were, which were closed. And I heard my mum literally standing outside the door, because the weight of her feet was shifting on the floorboards, making them creak a little bit. And I realized she was outside listening, you know, to my conversation with these. And then when she did come in, I turned away from my two friends and looked at her, and she had a puzzled look on her face and asked who I was speaking to. And I said, my friends. But as I turned back to look at my friends to, you know, to acknowledge them, to say, look, you know, my mum's here, they was no longer there. And, you know, I didn't really know, was quite confused where they'd gone. But, you know, my mum then sort of said to me, you know, I'm sure that they'll come back, you know. And with that, she closed the door and left me to what I was doing and went back downstairs. But, you know, my brother Kevin was saying to me later on, you know, that it was often spoken about my invisible friends. But, you know, as I describe in the book, what I didn't tell my parents at the time is that they wasn't children, they were adults. But these particular beings, at the time, I didn't know who they were, what they were. I guess you didn't, you don't really think about that as a child. But it was much later on when I started to investigate that I realized they were what is called, you know, in classical ufology, as Nordics. They looked exactly like them. And again, when they spoke to me, they didn't speak with the mouth. They communicated with the mind. But on another, you know, another time, I remember playing down in the front of the living room. And my mum was in the kitchen preparing a meal. And I remember playing with the little matchbox toys. Do you remember them, James? The little cars, you know, they were quite famous. I think they still are now, but I remember playing with them on the carpet, and I suddenly had this overwhelming feeling, almost like, I guess, looking back, like a command to go up into the bedroom and wait for somebody. Somebody was coming. I must go there. I must wait for them. And then I went up the stairs and I went into the bedroom, and, you know, I was going to leave, but then again, I had this feeling, no, you must wait. You must wait. They will be here. And then suddenly this one of the two that I'd seen before, or the male, he appeared again in the room, and he walked towards me, and he was, you know, a lot taller, as I said, than me and many of the adults around me. Excuse me. And I remember him looking down at me, and I was looking up into his eyes, and he'd been, he was communicating some information to me, but it, as I described in the book, it felt like he was talking to another part of me, not me here now, but another aspect of me. He was giving me information, and I think I was relaying information back to him. Again, I don't know what that information was consciously, but it did feel like it did feel like he was talking to another part of me that actually knew him.
Some of these beings seem to know more about us than we know about ourselves. For whatever reason, maybe it has to do with the in-between state, Bardo, mind swipe, or past incarnation swipe, whatever the case may be. We come into this incarnation destined to have a lifetime of alien encounters and my life experiences in some cases. But for us, it's a learning process. It's a journey of discovery. And yet some of these beings, all stripes, positive, negative, all points in between, some of them seem to have a good read on not only who we are, our genetic ancestral line, but also our past incarnations.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, you know, the alien abduction is, you know, as I say, it's not new, it's not modern. It's been going on since biblical times beyond this point of reference, because, you know, with these particular beings, this planet, I believe, is their playground, you know, and we are participants in it, but we're not participants by free will. You know, a lot of the activity that we've been involved with, you know, as alien abductees or my labs, it's I would say, forced upon us. It's not something we've asked for. In actual fact, I believe, you know, we do have some type of contract when we come here, almost like bullet points to help us with our spiritual, evolvement, and expansion of our awareness and spirituality. But I believe that somewhere in between this, they hijack these contracts and force us to in line with a contract we've not agreed with. And it's only because a lot of the time we don't remember that they have this control over us. You know, once we become much more aware, we start to break away from the programs, which we can do. It's a little bit difficult to do it once you're on them, but it can be done. It's then when we then regain our sovereignty and free will in line with creation that it's much harder for them to, you know, to put their hooks into us. You know, but whilst we're ignorant and we're, you know, in a way blinded, they have much more control over what they do with us. And that's the case also with the military. the military are in line with a lot of these projects. Now they have this type of technology. They have a much better understanding scientifically of these technologies. And again, this is another way they control us. So, going forward, now that, to some degrees, this type of a lot of things like Facebook and that, Facebook was believed to be created by the Central Intelligence Agency as a surveillance tool. I remember listening to some guy from there, I'm sure it was a director from the CIA, said that we've created the best surveillance tool, ever, because everyone's encouraged to put all their information onto it. And literally that's what they do. So, but on the flip side of that same coin, it's also good for us because it's allowed us to bring each other together, from all parts of the world, which we previously wouldn't been able to do. Gain information. So in that respect, it's given us also empowerment ourselves.
You take the good with the bad. As you said, it was set up initially as a vast surveillance monitoring system, but it's allowed people like us to network where otherwise we would not have had the means or the opportunity. And I think at an oversoul level, coming in to this incarnation, it's even set up, orchestrated in such a way at an oversoul level that we are destined to meet some people on social media and on the internet, because otherwise, because we have a common interest and we kind of like energetically gravitate towards one another in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the control mechanisms from, the perspective of the military, in regards to, again, creating alters, traumatizing and, isolating. They talk about removing the core essence of the person and, placing it in a secure area where it can't be, in a way it cannot be accessed by us. So again, in a way to put all the pieces of the fragmented self back together again, a bit like Humpty Dumpty, I guess. But once we're able to do this, again, this is where we can gain our control, and return to the contract that we come in with, our original contract.
It's a process because, like you said, so many of our parts are fragmented. It's like putting the pieces of a mosaic, a puzzle together, and then you add on to that incarnation's worth of trauma, of shame, of guilt, resentment, fear, and all this other stuff. And then we born into this incarnation, and then we find ourselves in these typically, most families are like this, at some level, dysfunctional, toxic relationships, to toxic interpersonal relationships in a family unit and an extended family scenario. And it seems to me that from almost a cosmic chessboard perspective, the archontic forces, they like at times to put certain narcissistic, malignly influenced people in your path at key junctures. And if we're not careful, we can find ourselves knocked off course, and it could take years or decades to start to right the ship. Because I know in my own personal experience, and I take full responsibility, we are who we associate with. So if we allow ourselves, because our self-worth is at such a nadir, to get around people who accept us who for we are, but they've got all these hang-ups, we've got all these hang-ups, and together we have this big dysfunctional hang-up party, right? That can tend to knock one off their course for a protracted period of time if they're not careful. But fortunately, we also seem at an oversoul level to set it up, orchestrate it in such a way that certain events, circumstances, and people can help us get back on course, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, in to some degree, they knock us from our compass. Our true bearings are suddenly knocked off and shifted in such a way that it can cause us to come into contact with all the wrong people, creating all the wrong types of energies, destroying our field further. But in some degrees, in similar ways to the targeted individual communities, you know, how they're targeted and the people that they have attacked them, you know, it's very much a game to do with control, to gain that control over you, to make you feel paranoid even, you know, and to disallow you from trusting people. And it makes, you know, when you can't trust people and when you feel like, you know, you're being attacked all of the time, even sometimes when you're not, that's the whole point of psychological warfare tactics, to enable you to think and always be on edge, to never feel safe. And this is one tactic they can use in order to, you know, create more trauma in you. And for them, it is about control. It's about isolating you from those, especially those who would be a good influence on you. Somebody who will create empowerment in you, you know, and maybe have you step back and be able to see a lot more what's going actually on in your life when you remove the white noise. What's left, you know, and what's left is what you work on. The rest of it is just like sugarcoating to distract you away from what you originally come here to do. But, you know, again, you know, this is, as we know, the military used this against all of us.
And we seem to go, or at least some of us seem to go through periods of isolation, for lack of a better term, because of the mistrust issues and because of whatever external forces are at work that we're not consciously aware of, or we may eventually develop a conscious awareness of some kind of presence, guiding, manipulating, orchestrating, that some people go through protracted periods of being alone, being without a partner, or when they do get involved with somebody, this spiritual warfare seems to erupt, and what seemed to be a burgeoning, blossoming relationship, quickly falls apart, and then the person, in one example, is alone again for a long period of time. And you know, there's good and the bad with everything. One of the good things, sure, about being alone and isolated is you have a lot of time to think and research and study and ponder these things. And then when one is in their own space and they're comfortable with in their own space, you can get a lot of processing done.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in that situation as well, you know, from a child. I you know, even now, I don't have many people around me. I'm quite isolated. But when I was growing up, I was very isolated from everybody. I wasn't even able to venture outside of basically the grounds of the school where I lived. My brothers were. I wasn't allowed to do this. My parents kept a close eye on me for some reason. I wasn't allowed to have friends at their house. So, you know, it was quite strict. But, you know, what you're saying, James, is, you know, what you're saying is, you know, it's true. You know, when you're alone, you can have these positive experiences where you can regain control, you can recharge your batteries, you can be away a lot of the time, you know, where you can explore and research, you know, about what's happening in your life. But on the flip side of that coin is also, you know, you can also in them times be attacked and experience the negativity and you know, when you're on your own, and it can be very dangerous, depending on how far and how deep you go into that pit of despair, you know. So, you know, for me now, you know, I have strength in being alone, but at the same time, you know, I do like being in the company of, you know, specific people, I guess people like us, really. But on the, again, you know, I do get attacked a lot as well, you know, when I'm on my own. But I guess it's how we deal with it, really.
Going to the present, is it more cyclical with you, cyclical, intermittent, where you won't have much going for, you know, some period of time, and then suddenly you're back in that cycle when there seems to be a lot more phenomena?
The alien abductions have seemed to have stopped a lot now, but what I tend to get now, again, is, off and on, and sometimes it's almost like the volume's turned up a little bit more, and you're getting a lot much more activity. But what I seem to get a lot more now is the military activity in some ways, or entities or demonic type energies that come to attack. I have a lot of, I guess what could be voice to skull interference threatening me. And often I get that now when I've done podcasts speaking about my book, telling me they're going to kill my cat, I had one of these the other day when I'd done a podcast with one of the hosts who was ex-military, US military police. And after I'd been speaking to him much a little bit later on that day, I heard a man talking to me in my head, telling me how and what he would do with my cat, which would result in its death. And I should keep my mouth shut. I get this every now and again where I can hear sometimes a voice, sometimes more than one voice, saying things. And a lot of the time it's not anything good or positive. It's bordering on what would be, I guess, attack, verbal attack. I think sometimes though, is it coming from a human voice, or is it coming from an artificial intelligence bot, that's on a loop, repeating itself to you to cause you, I guess, psychological terror?
Well, the message is almost invariably negative. They're never gonna give us voice to skull or telepathic messages of an uplifting kind of message and harmony, peace, contentment, none of that, because that strengthens us and it pulls us away from their energetic bandwidth. Do you ever hear them like talking amongst themselves about you?
I did have experience that I was going to, record in book two. I had an experience one when I was leaving my body. And when I left my body, there was actually two men and a woman waiting for me outside of the body. Now, the two men held me down, and the woman, I could hear the woman saying to the two men, "Can he see us? Can he hear us?" And they said, "Yes, he can hear us and he can see us." And when they had me basically on the ground, they were actually torturing me. And I remember them carrying out some type of operation on me. But they were saying to me, one of the men was saying to me, "It's for your own good, Michael. We have to do this. It's for your own good, because you won't do what we tell you to do." And I remember shouting out and screaming out, trying to push them off me. And I remember the woman as well taking a needle and putting that in me. And I don't know. I know that she was connected with the CIA. I just had that feeling, these thoughts just immediately come in my mind. That's who she was. She was the CIA. She was a scientist. And I remember thinking, afterwards, I returned back to the body. But I remember thinking afterwards they were actually waiting for me to leave my body. And I've had experiences like this before where I'm basically hijacked as I leave my body, and sometimes taken somewhere against my will, or other times I'm almost told to do something or go somewhere to do something. But I've had these experiences a few times where I can hear, I've actually in their presence. And I can hear them talking about me, but it's almost like they're talking about you, like it's a "hello, I'm here, I can hear you." It's like that type of feeling, like they don't care that you can hear. They're literally speaking amongst themselves, but don't care if you can hear them or whatever it is they're saying to you, or whatever it is they're doing to you. They just carry on doing it, and people might think that's not familiar with being outside of the body, But when you're outside of the body, your body can be injured still. And the injuries that you obtain on the etheric type or the astral body, when you come back here, they can manifest on the physical body. So, I often get this in podcasts where some people in the, listening, they don't understand the process of leaving the body, or in fact, that your consciousness can leave the body, let alone it can be willfully guided by yourself, or that can be overridden and you can be forced to go and do things by whoever it is you're dealing with at the time. But with the out of body experiences, I was able to do them pretty early on in my life. I learned how to manifest as a child. If I thought something, it would normally manifest within a day or two. But I have spoken to other adults that have been children that have, again, had these same experiences where they've been able to manifest.
Did you ever have precognitive dreams?
I did. I've had a few of them. Not so much now, but I have done in the past. I've got a journal full of, like all of us do, of experiences, that I will certainly be sharing in book two. Most of them are, I would say, geared towards the military side experiences. Sometimes here in the physical ones, a lot of the time outside, either in the immediate environment outside the body, or most certainly off world, off planet, or any the fourth dimensional astral levels.
You pointed out in your book, and you did a brilliant job explaining this too, for lay people.
Thank you.
Like when the ETs come in your presence or other entities, but in our example, the ETs come in your presence, you can feel this energetic shift that you're in some kind of electromagnetic field of some kind. And it turns you're immobilized. It turns, you can be conscious in your mind, but immobile, terrified, and other times they can astrally abduct you, which is a key part of this whole syndrome, which I don't think gets enough, there's not enough discussion about it, because a lot of people tend to focus on, with good reason, the medical practices, what have you. I think they're far beyond the medical experimental stage by this point. I think they're really into certain programs medically, but also, like you just pointed out, I'm not going to get into it because I've told the story before, but I've been taken out of my body, worked on by ETs, injected in my astral body, and then when I was returned in the exact same spot that I had an injection in my etheric body, it ached exactly as if there was an injection that was just put there. Only thing missing was the puncture wound.
Yeah, I agree with you, James. A lot more needs to be researched into this type of phenomena outside of the body, I mean, we're going into, where we are, beginning to understand, a lot of us now understand that different types of phenomena are not actually singular. They are in some way interconnected with one another. And, going into what we call multidimensional. But if we're talking about multidimensional, we need to then discuss the out of body experiences, because a lot of abductees do have out of body experiences that border on abductions. The greys in particular, that who seem to be, part and parcel generally of the abduction programs. I don't believe they run them, but they're most certainly, actively engaged in doing the dirty work. But the greys are. They're not third dimensional beings. They are multidimensional. They do have access to the astral realms, which immediately surround this world. And they do have access, through different stargates to other systems. And it would be easy for them to be able to abduct us. They know, like you said, James, they know a lot more about us, these particular beings. They've been around a lot longer than us. So I would say they have a good grasp on our electromagnetic fields surrounding their body and the various layers of these fields and their their expression in regards to these other types of dimensions and how we fit within them. So, you know, they're able to control our ability to move around outside the body as well. And if you think about it, it's much easier to take a person outside of the body than to mess around being, you know, in a certain place like they were in the earlier days, abducting people on lonely roads, out of their cars, you know, or even coming in, you know, to your bedroom. They can wait for you outside of the body and then take you then. It's much more easier to do this. They, you know, you can even be transported to, you know, dumps, you know, deep military underground bases. You know, I've had an experience once where I was acting as a spy, I would say, you know, as I a lot of the time on the programs that I've been involved with, I've been an astral spy, moving, you know, inside the earth and outside the earth on various objectives, I guess. But, you know, I don't know everything about them. I'm still learning about these and my role in what I did and, you know, and why I was forced to do it. But in one time, what I do remember, though, and there is a flip side of that, and I'm a double-edged sword for them, because on one hand, I've been used as a spy for them, but on the other hand, I've been spying on them as well. So that's, I guess, where, you know, as a would be a double spy or a double agent, I guess. So using that information against them in some way and reporting back to another source. I'm not sure who that was, but I know it's would be against, you know, what we call the elite. But on one particular occasion, I remember going to Area 51 and I entered this base. But unfortunately, I was caught in a containment field which is used primarily, I believe, for astral projectors and remote viewers.
Hold
on
that
the basis,
thought.
You know,
just want to interject very quickly, because one of the countermeasures they have, which I've run afoul of, is when you're an astral spy and astral operator. I used to break into underground bases before astral. Sometimes when you touch something, you get stuck to it, you know, and then you go into panic mode. Oh my goodness, you know, maybe they couldn't see me before, but they're going to sense that I'm here. I can't get up. And so you just force yourself to go back to your body because that's all you could do, you know. But anyway, please continue.
That's interesting, James. But like you said, I was actually caught in a containment field, which I understand is it's used mostly for spies, you know, for remote viewers, and certainly for those who can travel outside the body. You know, they must know to some degree, you know, that those who they abduct, who have an ability to move in and out of the body quite easily, or even interdimensionally, they must know that we could also be a potential threat to them. You know, possibly, although they've hijacked a lot of our energy and control us, there's still a part of the higher self that they cannot control. You know, it's almost like the rebellious energy. They've got a lid on most of it, but there's still that tiny amount of our true selves that exists. And sometimes that part of us is able to override their information and their programming. So on these occasions, I think, you know, we very much then are back in alignment to some degree, even if it's subtly, on a subtle level, you know, with what we actually originally come here to do. On this particular occasion, I was trapped in this field and I couldn't move. I couldn't get out of it. It was almost like, you know, a piece of metal to a magnet or a magnetic energy. And as I understood it, if I remained in this field, my body would die and I would never return to my body. And I was told that these fields are used to interrogate anyone that gets caught within them. So like a spider, you know, an insect with a spider's web. And they're detained in these fields and they're tortured and they're also interrogated to find out why you're there and what information you have. And I guess where that information that you gain from that visit is going to. So I do remember that, you know, I was told that if I were to stay there, I did actually obviously escape, otherwise I wouldn't be talking to you, James. But what my understanding of this, these are chambers that they keep you in indefinitely. So they can keep your etheric field, your astral body in these chambers. You can't escape. And also, I mean, they're very, you know, they're paranoid as well in regards to, you know, the military, in regards, and even the Greys. And I would guess some of the reptilians as well that are in some of these bases, in that, that we have the ability to break through their security systems. And I think this is one of the reasons why, you know, on one of the levels, it's believed, you know, that the Greys do study a lot of the time the energetic fields of humans, you know, and I think there's probably, that's probably again to discover how they can control more, but maybe also to make sure that we're not able to cause damage to them.
Those are all key points. And there's also the troubling notion that the Greys, Mantis beings, Draco, and other beings of various stripes are intimately involved in the death and dying process and the recycling process. Because some people have seen Greys in near-death experiences and they've seen them in a variety of settings. They've seen them inside of Lakota Sioux sweat lodges. They've seen them at raves, going in and out of people. Because when people are in that altered state, it tends to open them up. They can see things more. And some people reported seeing like multitudes of Greys going in and out of a single person, right? And I've talked before about astral detainment, which used to terrify me. And tell me if this sounds familiar, if it's similar to what you experienced there at Area 51. And just to elaborate on that point further, one of the problems I had in some of these astral break-ins was if I would sit down at a console, I found that I couldn't get up. I would be stuck, you know what I mean? And so I quickly realized that these were countermeasures against people like us, astral spies, astral operators. So I quickly learned not to touch anything, just to, you know, I may be what I think is an invulnerable state, but I'm not, right? And what I also found out was there are astral detention centers, for lack of a better term. And they could seem to be a city or a town, but the perimeter is enclosed by a big high wall and you're there. You know, it's not a dream. You can't wake up for it. You're just stuck there. Time passes excruciatingly slowly. So you know it cannot be a dream. And you walk from one end of this city to another. And you're just surrounded by high walls. You can't get out, right? And then there are variations of this where you could be like in this big circular corridor. And there are just people, I hate to sound judgmental. I'm just, you know, making an observation. The people in these scenarios that were trudging along in this long circular corridor, they kind of look like derelicts. They kind of look like, you know, druggies. I mean, our perception of like a really beaten down, wretched soul would appear like of all races, right? And they're just trudging along, and you're there amidst their midst. And every once in a while, you would go into a door in a corridor, and it would just seem like to be a dusty storage room or what have you, right? And then you get out because there's nothing there. Then you'd walk the corridors again, and you'd be just stuck in there. And then it would happen the next night, and then the next night, to the point where you're afraid almost to go to sleep because you're afraid of getting caught up in this astral detention. And on one occasion, I found myself in this place that was simulated to look like a nightclub. And I mean, they had fake palm trees there, a stage where presumably a band would be. And then I realized I couldn't get out of this place, right? I was just stuck in this empty nightclub. And the next thing you know, these two cops show up, right? And they start interrogating me and start threatening me, what have you. And it was another scenario where, you know, time was passing excruciatingly slowly. I was consciously aware, acutely aware of the fact that this is not a dream. I can't get out of here. These people are in my face. They keep interrogating me. They keep threatening me. And there's nothing I could do about it. And it wasn't until that I worked with a group of psychics that they happened thankfully, to divest me from that kind of control system where they couldn't access me before, because I went through a lot of times when I was astrally abducted, where you literally feel yourself pulled out of your chest, pulled out of the top of your head, pulled out of the soles of your feet. It varies. But I mean, it's instantaneous. Boom, they got you. You're out of your body, right? And there are variations of this with like the Greys and other ETs. Oh, shoot. Hold on, let me pause because I lost Michael. What I've experienced at times, and I'd like your thoughts on this because it kind of dovetails with what you talked about, the experiences you had in Area 51, the astral detainment, the astral operator training. I found myself in scenarios where I was certain I was in my astral body. And that's a key point, that people need to remember, that we always have to check ourselves and wonder, am I in my physical body? Am I in an astral body? Am I in some other aspect of an energetic body, right? Well, we can't make any assumptions, really. But I found myself being put through my paces, endlessly drilling and training in military mode, oftentimes, other times escape and evasion, what have you. But it was the same type of environment over and over and over again. And it was almost as if they were training me to prepare me for when they're going to flip the switch and they're going to use me in a real world op. And then everything would be familiar to me because I'd been trained over and over and over in a virtual astral environment. And then when they flip the switch and it goes live, so to speak, I'm doing these ops, but I'm already in a familiar place because I'd already been trained in it in a virtual environment over and over again. Has anything like that happened to you?
Well, you know what, James, I find it fascinating. That you're speaking about that, it's because it's when I've had these experiences, it's like, I've not had the opportunity to speak to anyone else that's had similar, activity as mine. But that there is an area, I've had a lot of experiences with over the years, which is, El Salvador in, Central America. And, I've got no reason why, I don't really have an interest in this particular area consciously, but there's obviously a reason why I've been brought into this area. But, there's one occasion where I was with a friend who's a, an operative, I would say, outside the bodies and my lab, very much military orientated. And we went to a particular place outside of the body. It was, I guess it was almost like the, Antarctica. It's a free zone, where we would go, where, we wouldn't be bothered, I guess. And I remember we were at this place and we were talking and, being outside of the body, people might think it's different to being here. It's not really. An exact replica of here, just overlaid upon the physical. It's just that you can do obviously a lot more. You have easier interactions with creating, manifesting, almost like the Matrix, where you're bringing up the weapons. This is something you can do as well if your mind is on it, like you were saying, James, trying to understand if you're in the body, if you're out of the body, if you're somewhere else, just having that awareness. And sometimes even then it's difficult to, to fully understand it. But on this particular occasion, though, we were talking, and I remember two vans pulling up not far away from where we were. They were blacked out. And then I remember in each van, the two military personnel got out. They were dressed in combats, fully black combats. And they walked towards us, and they were indicating for us to get into the vans, we wouldn't get into the vans. And I remember my friend being, he's very adept in, in combat, in looking after himself, should we say. But on this occasion, he wouldn't get in. He refused to get in. And I remember that they had the cattle prods. And I remember they used these on him, and he went down on the ground when they put into his body. And I remember they had to shock him quite a few times to have him comply. So when he's, I guess, if you were doing it physically, it would be your muscles that would be overcome.
Contracting, yeah.
Yeah, it would make him weaker, wouldn't it? And it'd be harder for you in a way, like to, clench a fist even. And so in some ways, in the same way, in the same manner, in the etheric body. So when his body was much more loose, he was being able to, he was dragged basically into one of the vans. And so the doors closed and they took off. And myself as well, I was brought into the van as well. And I remember we were in El Salvador, in this particular location. So we were driven then to this building, large white building. It had a white wall going right around it. It had quite a lot of grounds. And I remember we drove up in these vans and we were outside this big, it was a really quite imposing building. And it had huge brown doors on the front of it. And I remember my friend and operator, he was taken into one room. And, before I actually went through the brown door, he was already being secured into a chair because the door was open still. There was two guards with him who I believe were, Central American soldiers or mercenaries of some sort. These weren't dressed in black. The other ones, these weren't MIBs. I mean, when I say dressed in black, they were wearing black combats. And these guys in the room were dressed in, almost like olive green and camouflage clothing. But you could, they were from this particular area. And I was then taken into the room, which was next door. And again, similar to my friend, he had placed in a chair and my hands were bound at the back. And there was a man, military guy, standing, what would be on the right of me. And there was another one who was more or less the central mouthpiece. And I remember on this side, he had a, what would be a combat knife or a commando type blade in a pouch on his belt. And he was talking to me and he was asking me lots of questions about, my activities. I don't remember all of them, but I do remember it was an interrogation, which would be bordering if I didn't speak to him or answer him on, which would be bordering on torture. But the thing is, with this though, what was interesting about this is that I was in communication with my friend still, so I was telepathically linked in some way with him. And on this level, we have this type of connection where we know a lot of the time what the other person's thinking, what we will do, and quite very protective energy with each other, almost like twins, but not blood related. By the same parents, but and I remember talking to him. There was lots of things that come up about, if you don't comply, you'll basically be taken and be raped, and in this manner, so it's threats of sexual content as well. And it was, whilst he was talking and that, I understood, that this place wasn't, I didn't believe it was a real place. I believe it was a virtual reality training room. Almost like a kill room to some degree, where I was carrying out training for what would be a real life operation in some way. And I remember getting my hands loose, and I remember moving. I got up quickly. I moved quickly to the guy with the knife. I remember getting the knife, and I remember stabbing him with this knife and taking him out. And basically, I remember taking care of the second guy who was coming up behind me, so I neutralized him. But at the same time, my friend had already, taken out the other two in the other room, and he escaped through the front door, which he come in, and he took the van and left this building. And the only way out for me, I went through what was a window in this particular room I was in. But what I didn't know was at the time there was a drop that dropped down into water. So, and then, but when I hit the water, though, I remember then I returned to my body, and I was back in laying in the bed, and I spoke to my friend much later on, and he remembered the same experience that we'd been, somebody, he said that somebody had actually discovered where we went into his particular spot and grabbed us, but it seemed to me, after this, though, I started to have, along with my friend, operations outside, again, the body, but in areas of Central America where it seemed we were doing retrieval missions. We were looking for specific artifacts to bring them back, but these weren't being brought back for good guys. They were being brought back to be studied and to be used in, more nefarious ways. And I think they would be used against aliens. So, the virtual reality training grounds do exist for my labs.
Yes, they do.
I think the reptilians use them as well for military training. I mean, I know, the reptilians are very stronger and much more opposing, and sometimes frightening for people, but they do, one thing that they do respect human military. They respect our fighting abilities. And if you think about it, human beings, are very menacing on battlefields because we've got that knowledge. We've had it for centuries and we're very good at it. And not only are we good on the battlefields, we're good at building technology.
Yes, we are. You go back to the days of Archimedes and just all the contraptions he used to make, and the Greco-Roman wars and what have you. In the ancient world, necessity is the mother of invention. That's how the atomic bomb was built. And another point that should be brought up, you're familiar with this, I'm sure, is even though we're in an astral experience, there's still some degree of density involved in our environment. And I'm just thinking out loud here, but ideally, if one were to find himself, and a lot of times, as you know, when we're in an astral experience, we don't even have, there's no ingress, egress, which is suddenly there in some place, right? And
That's
there,
right.
varying degrees of solidity, of density around you. Ideally, I would think that we would be just out of phase of that reality, that dimension, so that we cannot be observed visually. Some intuitives could perceive us. There could be sensors, technology that could perhaps perceive us. But I mean, ideally, we wouldn't be seen. One of the things I've found is that when I'm in this astral dimension hopping thing and I wind up in some other realm or some other dimension, I quickly come to a realization sometimes that there is density here. There's physicality. When I move something, I can hear it scrape along the wall or the floor. I can bump into things, right? So that makes perfect sense that when you were detained and they were starting to work you two over, even though you were an astral body, one of your astral bodies, you were still in a state of confinement, state of density, because they were still able to operate within that field. And that's what's important for people to remember, that we are the sum of all of our parts because of the repeated trauma and the repeated dissociation. So many lives filled with trauma. It's a chore sometimes to be able to put it all together. And I do feel like you alluded to earlier, there are times when we do standalone ops that we're not under the control of negative ETs or negative military. We're not even under the control of good ETs. We're just doing something on our own. Because this delves into issues, and I'd like your thoughts on this as well. Because when one has the capability of being an astral operator, that you also have the potential to operate in alternate realities and other dimensions. Because what you're talking about, the retrieval operations, I'm familiar with, in a alternate reality sense, where people are going into other realities very similar to our Earth. They're bringing back documentation, they're bringing back technology, et cetera. It's not necessarily a futuristic version of our world. It could be a few years back from our perspective, but there's still things there that we need to, or somebody needs to retrieve. And I do believe positive, meaningful change can be affected in alternate realities to this one, right? So we're just getting started here. Please tell our listeners how they can contact you and how they can get your book, Michael.
Yeah, I'm available on the Facebook under Michael Cameron with a K. If anyone wants to speak to me or contact me, you know, I always answer everybody. And my book is available on Amazon on paperback. It's on hardcover, Kindle, and audio book.
And I encourage my listeners to plug into Michael's work, because Michael is just touching the tip of the iceberg. He's got so much more information to share. For our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the member segment.